Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Merida from Disney's Brave. I don't know, dude, but for me, that whole movie was about her subverting, like, her culture and her tradition to choose who to marry. And at the same time, I feel like so many queer people can relate to, like, subverting that idea of marriage and, like, having to marry whoever is chosen for you or having to marry someone of, like, opposite gender. You know, like, you don't have to do that. And I feel like so many queer people can relate to that. I don't know. Like, I love the movie because of that.
Yeah, I like the movie, you know, for the obvious reasons. For the, like, you know, it's a strong female character who literally don't need no man. And
yeah.
I mean, and her hair was, like, on and popping. Like, hair goals.
Oh, right, her curly red hair.
What up, Corona?
What's popping, Chingona? How you been, girl? How's life?
Good, good. This is gonna be like our fourth episode, like, in, you know, in a row, and it's like, it's kind of nice, but it's just like a lot.
No, yeah, I'm excited for it. You interviewed two artists for this, correct?
I did. They're shorter interviews than the one from last week, but they're still incredibly talented, and we telecommunicated, so please excuse the audio.
And they're part of GLAAD's Inclusiva, ¿cómo se dice? Pantalla Inclusiva?
Yeah, they were also commissioned by GLAAD for the Pantalla Inclusiva, or hashtag Inclusive Screens, which all kind of has the same purpose, like, that our podcast even has, is representation on screen.
Yeah,
especially in Spanish language media, specifically.
Yes, I love that. And I love that it exists and that these artists are coming out and doing something. You know, they're showing that they exist. So it's kind of amazing. But yeah, so we just want to give a quick shout out to, I guess we had a Patreon supporter again, right?
Yep, we've got another one. And just a reminder, guys, we are posting at least one extra episode or piece of content every month. The one for this month is already out. Mm-hmm. And next month we have a really good one too.
Okay, that's so awesome. And I think I have a one for the Concha. So I'm pledged for the Concha, right?
Yeah, so if you pledge for a Concha, then that's Fried Papita, and you get a shout out from her. If you could do Cafecito, that's from me. But let's go on, go ahead, give your shout out.
Yeah, so I want to shout out Marimar. I see you, girl. Shout out to you. I feel so special. thanks for always being in my DMs and, like, supporting me in my day, because I'd be having some bad days. And you'd be helping a sister out. So thank you so much. Shout out to you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the support and love.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, she's been one of our listeners for a long time, ever since we met in Austin. The rest is history.
Yes, we fuck with you, Marimar, so thank you from us to you.
And if you guys are interested in that, we forgot to say the name, but it's patreon.com/CYC podcast.
Yes.
Which CYC podcast is like what we are on everything, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter, if you want to follow us there.
Yes, give us monies. It helps helps two broke girls continue to make this that. Podcast.
No, don't say it like that.
Oh, so Maite, you want to go ahead and... I'm so excited to hear this interview, so I'm like, go ahead. I'm ready for it, Maite. Let's listen to it.
So the first one I want you to listen to is with Chucha, who is based in Oakland. They are an artist who, like, has done some incredible work. We're going to post their graphic up on our Instagram, and we're going to talk about it a little bit on the interview as well. So let's play it now. Well, hi, Chucha. It's great to have you on Cabronas y Chingonas.
I am very happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your work.
Yeah, so again, my name is Chucha. I identify as non-binary. I identify as queer. And I also identify as Chicano, Chicanx. I'm a little sick, so hopefully, you know, there's not too much sniffling on the recording. But yeah, I'm a child of immigrants. I'm an artist. I currently work for Culture Strike, which is an arts organization that focuses on immigration and climate change, and then on my as like a side gig, I do a lot of digital artwork and screen printing, and a few other things, but that's kind of what I focus on artistically.
Okay, yeah, that's awesome. I talked to Julio yesterday, who's also a part of Culture Strike.
Yeah, he's the homie.
Yeah. He's really awesome.
He's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. So, I mean, you do some really good stuff. I was, that's one of the reasons that I chose you to interview from, like, quite a few people that they told me to choose from. Your graphic was, you know, it was pretty simple. It was like, you know, I am bisexual, soy bisexual, which we like to talk about on the show sometimes because there's not enough representation for bisexual people.
Totally. And it's probably one of my favorite pieces that I've created, like, in terms of the digital work that I do. And I agree with you. There's a lack of representation in general, right, as like queer people of color, but within that, right, bisexual or pansexual, non-monosexual folks, trans folks, gender non-conforming or non-binary folks, right? There's like all these like categories or identities that are like way underrepresented even within the queer QPOC broad umbrella, right?
Right, exactly. And then specifically, you know, when they do end up actually talking about like bisexual representation, it's always women. Or at least that's what I've noticed. The most recent one that I saw with a man was on Grownish. Have you seen that yet?
I don't think so, no.
No, it's pretty new. Like, but it was the first time that I've seen on television people call out, other than maybe like Insecure, but them call out like how biased people are. Like, they're starting to accept bisexual women, but not men.
Yeah, and I'm sure that has to do with like, you know, like, I mean, there's so many things that go into that, into, you know, how, why bisexual and non-monosexual folks are underrepresented. But I think especially with like men, right, especially when you're like a man of color, there's already like the like effeminating, is that the word, emasculating men has been a tactic that like white people and white supremacy has used against people of color for a lot of years, right, against men of color. And so I think there's that there's like an aspect of that that comes with like being a bisexual person and being a bisexual man of color. There's this like power that is taken away from you when you're a man and you are emasculated and you're not seen as, you know, or you're seen like straight sometimes, but like gay sometimes, or, you know, there's all these weird ways that people try to construe bisexuality. And yeah, it's interesting. It's fucked up, but can I cuss in your podcast?
Yeah. Our names are a cuss word.
That's true. Yeah. Well, it's fucked up.
It really is. Yeah. That's why I love talking about it. And then, like you mentioned earlier, like non-binary characters are so rare. Like the first one that I've seen in a very long time is the one that just came out on One Day at a Time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the image that I created for GLAAD was for, it was to help them push out this report that they had come up with. And the report was about representation of like LGBTQ Latinx folks in Spanish language media. And even when you look at that, right, like in Spanish language media, there is such an underrepresentation of LGBTQ folks. And within that, right, like the majority, I think like 2/3 of characters that were LGBTQ in Spanish language media were like gay men. And so that leaves so little space for representation and visibility for folks that are lesbian or bisexual or trans or non-binary or, you know, a lot of those other identities that don't get the visibility that, you know, that we deserve as queer and trans folks.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So my next question is, like, have you seen yourself represented, or what's the first time that you were represented, or even if maybe you haven't seen yourself represented at all on TV or in film?
Yeah, I mean, that's so complicated, right? Because I feel like oftentimes, like, we get bits of ourselves that we can see in characters on TV. I don't know that I've ever really seen a character or a person on television that, like, I can say I, like, fully identify with. And that's also because there's lack of representation in media, right? There hasn't been too much space for people of color to even exist in general on television. But I see parts of myself in, like, different characters. I know, like, Curly on BuzzFeed is, like, someone who I can somewhat identify with in regards to, you know, like, we have, like, a very similar body type, I think. And there's this, like, queer, like, American Latinx, like, experience that Curly kind of Sorry, the audio is like super weird.
Yeah,
huh?
It's getting a little weird.
I don't know. That's weird. It's the government. They're spying on us.
They heard us say queer too many times.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, when I'm looking at media, when I'm looking at like characters and people that are in the media, I think Curly from BuzzFeed and Pero Like is someone that I can kind of identify with in terms of, you know, we have like a, I don't know, we're a little thick. I don't know if Curly identifies as thick or not. So I'm just putting that on him. And there's also this like Americanness that comes with like being like in the U.S. and being Latinx, being pochos or like not really always like knowing how to speak Spanish, like quote unquote correctly, right? Those are things that I can identify with when I see Curly on television or on the internet. Who else? I don't know.
You bring up a good point though of like, now we have digital media, right? Like before, like the early 2000s and before that, we didn't have YouTube or podcasts or anything to represent us. But now there's so many more opportunities. People like me and you can go out there and make content for our niches. So that's, I don't know. That's one thing that I really like about YouTube. I can find Mexican lesbians all over the place.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, the way that like, Hollywood and media is kind of evolving. It's all going digital now, you know? I'm not saying that Hollywood is dead or dying. It might be dying.
We'll see.
But, you know, yeah. But, you know, we're definitely, I feel like Netflix and Hulu and these, like, digital platforms are often more accessible or, like, more, you know, like, this is what people are using and to consume media. Also, like, the way that we consume the news and stuff, right? It's all very digital now. We're not really reading newspapers or watching it in the movie theater or on our TVs as we are on our laptops and on our phones, which is also very cool, right? I think like we're in this age where like accessibility when it comes to like social media and digital platforms is a lot easier now to consume media. So it's interesting the way that that also plays into like representation and being able to create your own media with these like new tools and technologies.
Yeah, it's good in many ways, you know, because like I said, we have that access, like you're saying. It's for me, it's beautiful like to have an entire category of LGBT, you know, on Netflix or whatever. That's pretty cool, even though like at least there's obviously so much room for improvement.
Yeah, totally.
So what I guess like other than digital media, do you think that there's anything like when you're a child, you know what I mean, where you saw it and you were like, oh yes, I relate to this?
Well, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, when I was growing up, I grew up here in the States. I grew up, I was like born in San Jose and I grew up in California. I've like never left Northern California. I've lived in Northern California all of my life. And there's, California has like a large population of Latinx folks, you know? And so also when I was growing up, my parents are both immigrants and they were undocumented for most of my life. I didn't speak Spanish, I didn't speak English until I was in kindergarten. And so I grew up kind of watching television and film and listening to music in Spanish. And that played a big role in, like, the way that I consumed media, right, growing up. Even, like, when we think about acculturation and, like, the type of music that we listen to when we were in school and stuff, like, it took me a while to catch up. I feel like I'm still catching up sometimes. Like, people are like, you don't know who this is? So I'm like, no, I'm sorry, like... I didn't grow up with that. But for me, like, I think, like, growing up, especially watching, like, Spanish language, like, television, like, queer and trans characters were, like, not really present in, like, a lot of, like, the TV shows or films that I was watching. And when they were, it was, like, comedic relief, or it was, like, you know, it was, like, someone who poked fun at. It was, you know, a joke. It was someone who was like a hairdresser, and that's the only roles that were like afforded to like queer characters, you know? So I don't know. It was weird. Also, like now, like there's so much like more queer representation in the media than we had growing up, I mm-hmm. think. And so it's interesting to see now the way that narratives are like constructed around like queerness and transness, especially for like people of color. And the way that like we had access or like representation in the media when we were a lot younger, there's more visibility, I think, and there's more like space for queer and trans narratives in the media. There's still a lot more work to be done, mm-hmm. obviously, you know. But there's a lot more now, or at least like more, I guess, quote unquote, like accurate representations. Whereas before, like, we were always the butt of the joke. We were always there for comedic relief. It was always someone to like poke fun at.
Right. I mean, the first thing that I can remember of ever seeing anything even close to it is like Martin, you know, he used to like dress up as a woman or whatever. And that was just a joke. And like, you're right. Like, that's the first instance that I can see. So yeah, you're right. Like, it has changed to where like trans characters are trans characters and they have lives mm-hmm. and dimensions and stuff like that, which is nice.
Yeah, because I even think to like, there was that person on El Gordo de la Flaca who was like a trans woman. I don't remember her name on the show. But she was like, just like, she was there for like comedic relief, you know what I mean? Or like whenever I would watch like TV, like queer people were like hairdressers. Or, I don't know, like, yeah, I feel like I always associate, like, growing up, the media that I would see, like, queer people were always, like, hairdressers. And it was always, like, very, like, effeminate men, which is not a bad thing, but also, like, we're not, that's, like, one representation, right? Like, there's so many ways that we exist.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that, too. It's, like, they want to make it, like, they're trying to separate gay men from men. And, like, that's not, they're still men. You know what I mean? Like, you can't.
Totally.
I don't know. That's pretty frustrating.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I look at media now and there's still like, it can be hard to talk about it too. Like the way that like Spanish language media and like English language media like differs. Like, I feel like oftentimes we're like, when it comes to like stuff like colorism and sexuality and gender, like people look at communities of color as like being behind or being backwards. And we still see a lot of like colorism, like we still see like blackface in Spanish language television, right? And it like oftentimes goes without like being questioned. Whereas like if it was like an English language television or media, like it would bring a lot more like controversy, like stuff like that. I look at that, but also like I think it's a lot more complicated, right? Like I don't know, like even in Spanish language media here in the United States, like. It's not just about like representation and like having access and opportunity, but we're also up against like white supremacy yeah. and like colorism and racism and stuff in the United States. So we're like producing culture within these like challenges, these broader challenges, and that affects the way that we tell stories and the way that we like understand the world around us, right? And a lot of it is like symptoms of like, you know, these are the tools that like white people are using against communities of color, right? Like pinning like black and brown folk against each other. Or saying that, like, you know, like, an emasculate man or an effeminate man is not a real man if they're a person of color and stuff like that. These are, like, stuff that, like, comes up in the way that we produce media, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, having to walk the line of teaching our own people and having to work within the colorism within our own communities and transphobia within our own communities. But also, like, you know, at the end of the day, we're all in it together when it comes to fighting against those who oppress us just because we're people of color. So it's
yeah, and we're fighting for resources and we're fighting for representation, you know what I mean? Yes. Like
we're just like, fighting. There's all so many the time.
TV networks. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so I mean that's another that brings up another point that's a good reason to have that representation, because we need escapism too. We need time to see ourselves on screen and to be happy for a little bit. You know, that's why lately I've been fighting for a lot more queer representation that doesn't involve tragedy. Because like we have to be happy at some point. We're spending all day long fighting.
Yeah, like I was watching this interview lately, and I forget the name of the person that they were interviewing, but she's this filmmaker and screenwriter and actress. She's black, and she was talking about how like for her, when it comes to like the work that she does, for her form of activism oftentimes looked like just people existing, right? Like black people just existing and being who they are, like. Like, it doesn't have to be super complicated. It doesn't have to be, like, explicitly political. Like people of color existing in the media is a political statement, you know what I mean? I think also, like, now there's a lot of people of color who are producing media and, like, trying to put it out there. And, of course, like, it takes money and time and resources to do it, right? But, like, it's important that we're doing it, especially now that, like, a lot more people in Hollywood are talking about like representation and access. Like we need to be doing media production and cultural production as like artists and producers of color, And oftentimes I think people get scared because I feel like we often feel like it's so easy for us to fuck it up, or like we have to be like perfect representations of for our community, right? Like the weight of our communities is on our shoulders. But like, I don't think it has to be that complicated. I think just like people existing in the media, that's like that's revolutionary. And also just like our stories don't have to be perfect, right? Like, I feel like we always have to be this representation of like the perfect like brown person, the perfect queer person, and our lives are not like that. Like, our lives are messy and imperfect, you know?
I know, I agree. I absolutely agree, because it's, I mean, what a boring story it would be, like, you know, somebody, like, if we start, we're, a lot of people are trying to make stories about undocumented people now, and like, how boring would it be that it's just like a straight A student who hasn't done a single bad thing in his entire life, and then he gets oppressed? Like, that's depressing. Like, let this person have a personality.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's like the way that those narratives are creative also like benefits certain people in like policy, right? Like I feel like when we're talking about like undocumented folks in our community, and like the way that like politicians try to like separate people into categories, like who's worthy of staying and who's not worthy of staying, like unless we're like representing like stories the way that it is, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't always have to be like the valedictorian of the high school that happens to be undocumented who like deserves to stay. Like, why doesn't every undocumented student deserve to stay and like pursue education or pursue like a career or work, you know? And yeah, like oftentimes when you see like undocumented folk or queer folk or trans folk in the media, it's always about like sadness and deportation and violence and tragedy. And that's important, but also like joy and like existing and sexuality and like, you know, like shopping and eating and like all this like stuff that we do every day or that we do all the time. Like, that's part of our narratives and that's part of like our realities and existence. And that's part of like what humanizes us. And that needs to be represented in the media as well.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because on my graduating class back in Texas, our valedictorian was an undocumented Latino man. But you're right. Like, yeah, they always want perfect people doing these things. And like, nobody's perfect, obviously.
And that's just so stressful too, like I know, especially for myself, like as a queer like person, as a brown person, as a child of immigrants, like I always felt so much pressure to try to be like perfect or like, you know, like get good grades and shit. And to a certain extent, like I was able to do a lot of that. Like, I graduated high school and I went to college and I got a degree and I'm like, and I have a career and I'm doing art, you know? But at the same time, like, it's like, you know, like that was a lot of pressure and a lot of like guilt and sadness and shit that came with that process and that journey. But also, like, I'm hella imperfect too, you know? Like, I'm messy as fuck, I chain smoke, I drink, I go out, like, I don't know how to manage my money, you know? And that's part of, like, who I am. That's part of that story too.
See, but, like, if we were telling your story on the TV series, like, yeah, of course, like, it's important to talk about, like, the emotional turmoil that comes with being a child of immigrants and then disappointing them with what your identity, basically. Like, so that's what happened to me. Like, it's still like people want to see you how you vent, you know what I mean? People want to see how you react to that and how you overcome these challenges.
And it was so weird. Like, I feel like also when we think of like coming out in like Latinx families or whatever, like, it's, I feel like the, if there was like a stereotypical story of that, it's like we, like, you know, person comes out and they disappoint the family and then there's like this process of mourning and stuff. In my family, like, I'm one of four children, and me and both of my sisters are queer, and like also when we think of like families, right, it's always like the mother is like very motherly and supportive and the father is like very like takes it hard, especially if it's like a boy in the family. My dad could give a shit, like he don't give a shit. He was like you know, when we came out or whatever, or even now, like one of my sisters is married, and my other sister has a partner that she's had for like 5 years. I'm the only one that can't get a boyfriend, but it's fine. This is part of like our families, and like it hasn't really been like that big of an issue, especially with my dad. Like, my dad is like super like supportive. My mom, I think, had a little bit more of a challenge with it, but also like I don't know, like in my family it wasn't that tragic. Like, I never had to come out in my family. Like, I was hella femme when I was little.
They're just like, okay, it's who he is.
I was in high school still, like, trying to ignore the fact that I was queer or whatever. Like, I was, like, in denial. And when I did finally decide to come out, which was, like, my senior year of high school, everyone was like, yo, like, you didn't have to wait that long. Like, we already fucking knew. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was one of those.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I like. Something that we mentioned previously on the podcast is that we've gotten to a point where, like, like, maybe we don't need to, we need to stop coming out, and people need to stop telling us instead, like, hey, it's okay to be gay. Because, like, having to do that year after year with everyone you meet and having to do this whole coming out process, it doesn't feel fair.
And it's like, you know, like, that's why media is so important, right? Like, that's why these narratives need to be told, and that's why, like, our lives need to be portrayed in the various ways that, like, we show up, you know? Because, like, we should be at a point where, like being queer is not something that you have, like, you know, or like being whatever, like, shouldn't have to be such a challenge. Like, we shouldn't have to be coming out all the time, or it shouldn't have to be like such a big deal that, like, you know, like the first transgender, like, Latino in a film, or like the first, like, trans person to, like, make a certain amount of money. Like, that should be a norm. Yeah, you know?
Definitely. Some of these, like, Hollywood is being outed right now so badly on how it pays people of color and women, and I love it. I'm like, give these women their money, give these people of color their money, because they deserve it. And you know that they're going to turn it around and create more content for people who need it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Hollywood for the longest time was run by white people, you know? Now that there's, like, a lot more people of color and women and queer folk and trans folk in Hollywood, like, we need to strategize and, like, build with each other to, like, get to a point where it's more equitable, right? Like, I think one thing that we've been talking a lot about in, like, my circles and stuff is, like, we don't know how much to charge for work sometimes. Or, like, we don't know what, like, white people are getting paid for the same work that we're doing sometimes, you know? So, like, I feel like white people need to share, like, their fucking information and their resources, right, with people of color. You know, like, let us know how much you're getting paid or how much you're charging for certain type of work. Even, like, within, like artist networks and creative networks of color, like, I think we need to be having more discussions and being more transparent about, like, you know, like, this is how much I charge for my work, and this is how much you should maybe charge for your work. This is what, like, you know, like, a licensing fee is. Like, this is how you can build a website cheaply. This is who you can talk to. And whenever we do have access to, like, to opportunities where we can, like, hire other folks, like, we need to prioritize our communities in that, and really, like, build, like, a culture and a system where we're reaching some form of equity with white folks in Hollywood and in the arts. And even now, like, a lot of the resources that go to artists it's for the most part going to, like, straight cis white men. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point of, like, white people being allies to us, because very recently, I think, I can't remember her name, but there was a white actress who brought in a woman of color into her deal. Like, they came in as a package deal because she found out that, like, the woman of color was making, like, a fraction of what she was gonna make. I forgot her name. It's Octavia Spencer. And what was that lady's name?
I don't remember.
Me neither, but she, like, you know, she came through for her, and, like, we need to see more stories like that, because, you know, Latinos, I'm not gonna lie, like, yeah, we should do better about helping each other out, but the white allies have a lot of more privilege, you know what I mean? They can do a lot for us too.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important. Like, right now in Hollywood, there's, like, all these movements happening, right? And part of that is, like pay equity and access and representation, right? Like Girls Trip and Get Out, like, these two films that did so wonderfully in Hollywood and were so successful, right? Like, people don't think that, like, stories of and by people of color are, like, belong in Hollywood. These are examples that they do belong in Hollywood, right? And I think people are, like, paying attention. And with that, like, there's so many, like, white actors and actresses. There's a lot of white actresses that are talking right now about, like gender equity in pay and in representation in Hollywood, and that's important. But also, like, within that, we can't ignore, like, a lot of the intersectionalities, right? So, like if you're speaking up for equitable pay for women in Hollywood, then you also need to be speaking up for equitable pay for women of color in Hollywood. Or, like, even a lot of men of color are making less money than white women are in Hollywood and in other industries, you know? So, like, it's a lot, it's, like, super complicated. And right now, I think, with, like, so much attention being put on these issues in Hollywood, like, this is a time when, like, white people need to step up and, like, really show up for other artists of color.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, hopefully we're, you know, so far 2018, as far as the media goes, hasn't disappointed me too badly. Like, I've gotten some good shows that are, I'm big on TV, so a lot of shows have been really impressing me. So hopefully we keep going on that positive, you know, route. But I guess tell everybody where we can find you and your art and etc.
Well, you can find me at your local gay club. No, you can find me on Instagram at la_chucha. I have a Tumblr with some artwork, but I haven't really, it's not like very well organized or updated, but it's lachucha.tumblr.com if you want to look at some of my work there. But yeah, Instagram is probably like the place to go. But also, that's where I put my personal stuff in there. So, you know, you'll see the real side and the artistic side of the chooch.
Sorry, we'll tag you in case they don't want to go and look for it, you know.
For sure. Yeah, and I'm based in Oakland right now. I'm in the Bay Area. So if folks are in the Bay Area and they want to kick it, like, holler.
Yeah, for sure. And if you come down to LA, we can hang out.
Yes, I want to go to LA more. There's a lot of the homies live in LA, and I used to go to LA a lot more often, and now I haven't lately. So I'll be out there a few more times this year, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for being on Cabronas y Chingonas, and don't be a stranger.
I won't. Hopefully that was helpful.
It was. It was, for sure. That was our interview. What did you think?
Oh, man, that was amazing. They are so interesting. I love that they brought up queers more than parody. Didn't you also bring up something about not wanting to see queer tragedy? And they brought up not wanting to see queer men or queer bisexuality or anyone who is in that, like, to be represented as, like, a joke. I really like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the tropes from the past of basically queer people being jesters, they're totally problematic. And I've just got, I think it's just me personally, I've gotten to a point where I don't want to see queer people die. I don't want to see I don't want to see us, you know, suffer or do nothing but suffer. So I'm definitely in that place.
Yeah, you're definitely in a different way of storytelling. And I definitely agree. And they, oh my God, they brought up so many interesting things, especially about seeing themselves as Curly from, was that BuzzFeed?
That he was, yeah, or better like or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, Curly's like that Curly's like a thick man, and they were like, I totally see myself in Curly. I thought that was hilarious.
That's, yeah, it's dope. I love that digital media gives us like an extra way, more accessible way, and to see ourselves. It's like, you know, I mean, you know me, I'm obsessed with like California Love 84.
Yes.
Like, I'm not gonna find her on TV, at least not for a while.
And I love that, like, people are creating in digital spaces, and that's kind of like your next interview, right? They're creating digital art. They're creating art that...
You're talking about animation, and yeah. By digital media, I mean, like, YouTube. I mean, anything on the internet as opposed to on TV. But yeah, the next interview is with Pamela Chavez, who is an illustrator, and she's working on an animated picture. So let me go ahead and play you that interview.
Woo, I'm hyped for that.
All right, guys, I'm here with Pamela. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about your work.
Yeah, I am an animator, and I'm an illustrator, and I'm queer Costa Rican. And I am currently working on my first animated short that should be between 25-30 minutes, which in animation world is quite a chunk of time. And yeah, I've been working on it for a few years now. We're about to finish it, and I'm really excited about showing that. And yeah,
that's really exciting. I mean, after years.
Yeah, it's gonna be, it's awesome. We've put a lot of heart into it, and I think it's a good time for it. We're pretty juiced about it.
So how did you get started as an artist? Like, what inspired you?
Well, I've sort of always been an artist. My family immigrated from Costa Rica to the United States, and then I was actually born, so I was the only one in my family that had documents, but we also ended up kind of immigrating back to Costa Rica. And while we were immigrating back and forth and all over the place, I always would draw. Drawing was like the one consistent thing I had. And so it was always something that I did. And then I ended up going to UC Santa Cruz and studied American Studies there. And then I graduated and I started doing nonprofit work and youth work and was super into it. And I always incorporated art somehow into like how I worked with young people. And it was a pretty cool part of working with young people. But then I just decided that I felt like I needed to really focus on my artwork and put all of my heart into it. And so I decided to go back to school and I got a degree in illustration from the Rhode Island School of Design. And since then I've been sort of freelancing and working on this film that I wrote while I was at Rhode Island School of Design in 2014. I pitched it to Latino Public Broadcasting for some funding that they were, that they had for new media projects. And right after I graduated, I ended up getting that funding and I've been working on the film since. So it's kind of my story.
That's amazing. So is there anything you can tell us about the project?
Yeah, definitely. It is about a little girl who's immigrating from Costa Rica to the United States. And she has to decide if she's going to bring her best friend, which is a little turtle. So it's an immigration story told through the perspective of a little girl, through the lens of a little girl. I felt like it was a good way to approach immigration for people who have immigrated, for families that have immigrated, and maybe people who are curious about immigration through this sort of like almost innocent perspective, but with, you know, the grounding, the background of what's happening in immigration in general for people. So it still has that element. It's not like totally immune to reasons why people immigrate, but it's through this little girl's perspective, which I thought was like a unique way to tell the story. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of great content that is kind of told that way. Like Guillermo del Toro does it all the time, and it turns out amazing.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. What an inspiration to sort of look at his work and see how he addresses like these really difficult issues, you know. And I thought that was cool. I mean, like a lot of people think that's cool, I guess, because he's like really good at it.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, and it's like, well, I think that's one of the things that's cool about this sort of field is that you can, and Guillermo del Toro does it too, is like using animation in its fantasy and its like and its creativity to push the boundaries of how we tell stories and the kind of stories that we tell. And I think especially for Latinos, Latinas, Latinx folks, queer folks, like, what an amazing opportunity or amazing platform to be able to talk about some of this heavy stuff. And for immigration, having done youth work, it was like important for me to be able to talk to kids about immigration. Even like kids that have immigrated, it's a difficult topic because it's so political or it's so like demonized, and it's difficult to have those conversations, and it's like awkward for teachers and it's awkward for other students. And so I just feel like this could be a sort of platform to have a conversation in a way that is filled with a little bit more like humanity and heart, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And you bring up a great point of like how important it is to use art and even just regular media to talk about these subjects and for people to see them, especially kids and even older people. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it was so cool that some of these artists got together and were able to do this artwork for GLAAD, for the Pantallas yeah. Inclusiva and Inclusive Screens. Tell me a little bit about your piece that you did. I absolutely love it.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it was a cool opportunity from Janet Quesada, for sure, to do something like this. And when she first reached out to me about this campaign, she sort of gave me like a list of options of different topics that I could possibly illustrate and that other artists can illustrate. And I was like, oh, this is kind of hard a little bit, but it's kind of hard in like the creative, challenging sort of way. Okay, how am I gonna do this? Like, how do I represent like inclusivity in an illustration? And so that was, it's sort of like in an editorial illustration sense, where it's just like this bigger topic addressing bigger issues within an illustration. I thought it was really a dope project. And having, like, later on seeing all the other artists that were involved in it was super cool. I thought it was a pretty brilliant, awesome way to discuss something that I think, not only is it important, obviously, to talk about, like, inclusivity, but like, how people get creative with that topic, you know what I mean? How people represent that. And so, for me, I was just thinking about people that I know, myself, like topics that are go unaddressed, and then like the people that represent that and what they might look like in cartoon form. That's sort of what I did with having folks like sitting on a couch watching this sort of screen with a like hetero couple just like kissing, and then obviously like they're all sitting there like watching the screen and just like not represented. That's basically how it goes down, you know what I mean?
They're like, totally bored by it, and I relate to it so much. That's so relatable.
It's like, all right, cool, another one of these stories. I get kind of like in their position, like what would they look like if they're watching this, and like just making it sort of homey, you know, like I don't know, to me it just looks like a friend's house and their couch, and we're all just hanging out watching the same kind of bullshit.
The reason I think it caught my attention is because for Cabronas y Chingonas, one of the things that I use for our description is like just a cabrona and a chingona sitting on a couch looking for good representation. So I saw it and I was just like, that was me before I started like really putting time into looking for, you know, better representation basically. And I used to watch all this boring straight stuff. I love that image, and we're gonna share it on our Instagram so that everybody listening can go check it out, because it's amazing.
That's awesome. Right on. Thank you. The project was amazing, and I think all the other artists, I was kind of blown away by their representations too. So that was dope. I felt like super lucky to be a part of that.
Yeah, I agree. You guys all did amazing. So since we're on the topic of representation, to, I guess, help get to know you a little better, do you want to talk about a little bit about where you first saw yourself represented in, if ever?
Yeah, sure. The first time I saw myself represented on screen in terms of my queer identity and being Latinx would be through Aurora Guerrero's work. As a filmmaker and her watching her films, I was a student at UC Santa Cruz when I first saw, what was it? Oh, was there short?
The only one that I think I know off the top of my head is Mosquita y Mari.
Yeah, I saw what was it? Oh man, I'm blanking out on her on the short before that. There's a couple of shorts, and it was on one of them was on HBO. It was like 5 minutes or something. It was super short. And I was just like, oh my God, two women are making out right now, and they're queer, and they're both Latinx, and like, oh my God. I remember being so excited about that. Was it Pura Lengua? Is one of them, but that's not the one I'm talking about. There's another one. It'll come to me. Anyway, that was the first time. And so that was kind of the first moment that really stands out to me. But then in terms of like animation and me seeing something that I wanted to do that was similar to like what I would feel like I would like to continue doing in the future is the film Persepolis. I'm not sure if you've seen it, by Marjane Satrapis. She's a French Iranian woman.
Not yet, but now I have to.
Yeah, you got to check it out. It's actually a graphic novel. I think it was a graphic novel first, and then it turned into an animated film. It's super dope. It has a lot of politics in it. It doesn't talk about like queer identity or anything like that. and it's, you know, it's like French Iranian, but there was like politics in it, and there was like a deeper substance that I felt like wasn't like really told before, and especially in that way. And it was through like this perspective of a young Iranian girl, and I felt like, whoa, like that kind of speaks to me, because that's sort of like what I went through a little bit. Not the same, obviously, because it's a whole different country and different circumstances, but like, why not apply the same sort of thinking behind my experiences and the experiences of the people that I love, and queer people of color, you know what I mean? So that was the, I think that was the first time that I saw like an actual animated film that made me feel that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, I always find parallels, even if it's not Mexico, even if it's not necessarily being a queer woman. But yeah, there's always parallels with people who are othered and ostracized.
Totally.
So I love that we can relate.
And then there's that one moment where you're like, oh, this is about something else. You know, this is like deeper than just entertainment. This is a whole other conversation about what's happening in our world. Yeah, I love finding that through artists that aren't always like just like a mirror to me, like a like 100% reflection. Rather, it's like this whole other circumstance, but like we could still intersect, you know?
Right. Circumstance is actually the name of a movie that I would recommend to you if you're into that.
Oh, cool! Yeah.
Yeah, you should check that out. It's it is about a queer, like two queer women actually, who are kind of being persecuted for being themselves. That was a really good one.
Yeah, I gotta check that out. I haven't
heard of it. So the pieces that you've already mentioned, would you say those are the ones that have best represented you, or have you seen anything like since then that really captured you?
I would say they kind of continue to be what I feel like represents me.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool, because a lot of the times, or like from whenever I ask this to people, they usually they'll have something from their, you know, from when they're younger, and then now they have found something way better because, you know, it was a lot harder back in the day.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So that's awesome that it's still like continuously your inspiration.
Yeah. There's also a comic book. It's a white woman. Her name is Allison Bechdel.
Is it Bechdel?
Bechdel, maybe, yeah.
From
maybe
the Bechdel test?
Oh, I don't know.
I think I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the name.
Her the comic book is called Fun Home.
There you go.
It's like a queer comic book. I thought that was pretty cool. I wasn't reading it. I was like, oh, yeah, I feel I'll represent it right now. But, like, it has a little bit of a deeper substance, but, yeah, it's cool. It's like and it's a comic book too, right? There's one I haven't seen. I haven't read it yet, but called Bingo Love. I just saw it the other day. It's like two queer folks, like a little comic book, I'm excited about. But yeah,
I've heard of both of those, and there is a couple of episodes where I've talked about comics. So I think that, you know, that's another place that people can go to for representation, even though it has its problems, but especially in the like not Marvel, non-DC companies, you can find some really great stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's you can also sit there and appreciate the artwork, which is a plus.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're just like mesmerized by like this like talent that people have. Yeah,
definitely.
It's Viennese Girl. That's the film, the HBO. Well, it premiered, I think, on HBO, Viennese Girl. Aurora Guerrero's short. That's the one that I saw that.
Awesome.
That, like, really stood out to me.
I'm definitely going to check that out. Definitely got to look at it. And so what are you, other than your short, your animated short, is there anything else that you're working on that you're kind of excited about?
I actually have a few projects. I actually can't get into them a lot, but there, one is like a trans project that that's been in the works for quite some time. There's a lot of really awesome trans writers that are involved and artists, and I think that should be like sometime this year.
This year.
Yeah, but I can't really super get into it. But I'm also kind of working on my own stuff on the side. But mostly this year right now, I'm like concentrating on the film that we've been working on and just like trying to get that out. I think that's just the kind of primary for me, just as an artist and animator, just finally getting like that first really big project off the ground. So, but yeah, but there's a few things in the works for sure.
Fantastic. I can't wait to see the short. Like, hopefully we can even cover it on the show, because we're always looking to switch it up. We usually just talk about like a movie or a TV show, but like a short animated thing, like that would be new for us. So I hope we can check that out soon.
Yeah, it should stream online once it's done. So like around, I'd say like in the March, probably be out there in the world. Well, yeah, that'd be cool to talk about it. I'd love that.
Fantastic. And maybe we can have you back on.
Right on.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, and go ahead and tell everybody where we can find you online.
You can find me at my website, PamelaChavez.com. For now, that's a great place. And thank you. I appreciate the platform and chatting with you about this. It's pretty fun for me. So.
Awesome. Yeah, this was fun for me too. Trust me. So everybody find her at PamelaChavez.com, and we'll feature her piece for GLAAD on our Instagram.
Oh my god, that was amazing. That's so interesting. I love that interview too.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm grateful that even though we're not, like, right next to each other location-wise, that I'm still able to talk to these amazing artists. I mean, what did you think of... I know you have something to say about Pamela's favorite show. Film, I guess.
Or her favorite, which one?
The short that she mentioned with Aurora Guerrero.
Oh my god, yes. Okay, so I watched the short that she mentioned by Aurora Guerrero like hace años, like around the same time as Quita and Mari came out. It's called Viernes Girl. It was an HBO short that she shot like back in the day. And did you watch that short?
I did. I didn't know where it was going at first. At first I was like, what is this? And then I was like Monday, oh, what Tuesday? Is this?
In the actual short, it's between a brother and a sister, and the sister is like highly annoyed the whole time. But the good, interesting thing about the sister is that she's not femme. Like, she's like a Latinx person who isn't femme, who is like,
she's
obviously
like a STEM.
And she was obviously herself already. Like, she was very comfortable, you know?
She was very angry.
And I loved it. It was so good. Everyone go watch that short. It's on YouTube. I don't know if it should be on YouTube, though, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, just Google it, Loca. But yeah, it's worth a watch. It's like 7 minutes long. I would love to see something like that done today, for sure.
And it's called Viernes Girl by Aurora Guerrero, and it's on YouTube. You guys should watch it because I love that. And then she also brought up something really, like, I thought really, really interesting and creative. The idea of immigration and bringing humanity to immigration by using children. I thought that was beautiful. And then you compared it to Guillermo del Toro, and I was like, oh, yes, connections.
Yeah, I mean, she does what, I mean, you know, it's not like the first time that it's been done, you know, using the, you know, kind of like innocence and curiosity of children to tell a story, because they kind of represent the viewer, like they're learning. But bringing immigration to it certainly isn't something that's done very often. And that's a really creative way to do it, because, you know, people have, they have assumptions about it. And you know, mm-hmm. seeing it from a kid's point of view, like, it's like seeing it, you know, without all your prejudices. It's great.
Yes, it's just about a little girl trying to come over. And she mentioned a turtle, and it just got more adorable. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so excited. I can't wait.
Yes, like, definitely, you know, check out our social medias and stuff. As soon as we have any word, like, we're going to share it out. And hopefully we'll have her back on the show to talk about the actual short.
Yes, I'm so hyped for it. But oh my god, you did such a good job, Maite. I really liked all the interviews. Like, I'm so jealous. I just wanted to be like near the interview to hear it, but I still got to hear it, and it was still amazing. And props to you. Good job.
Thanks. Like, somebody, like, complimented my interviewing skills, and I was like, I don't believe it, but thank you so much.
Well, I'm not the only one. I had a couple of my friends also were like, wow, she did a really good job, and I was like, oh, I gotta tell her. She's not gonna believe me, but I have to tell her. So there were other people, definitely, that agreed with me.
Dope, because I get so nervous in front of a mic, and you already know that.
Yeah, you guys, she gets, like, she has to do a test sound really quick, and then she's like, okay, I'm good. But you did really good. I'm really proud of it. I really like it a lot.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And hopefully we can hook you up. I'm trying to, like, brainstorm, like, you know, some local Dallas people that you could interview and stuff like that. So audiences, you guys can help us out if you know of anything. Yes. or have any ideas of awesome Latinx or queer or both, like, creatives in the Dallas area who want to, like, be on the show. Hit us up, and, you know, you can DM us at CYC Podcast on our social medias, or facebook.com/CYC Pod. Mm-hmm. Email us CYCPodcastmail@gmail.com, however you want, but just, yes, let us know, and we'll, you know, that way Fred Pepita can get her own interviewing skills on.
Slide into the DMs. We'll be glad to have you on here. We love it. Like, it's awesome.
The one thing that I did want to mention was Klexicon, which is coming up in April, like early April.
Ooh, what's that?
That's something that Klexicon is like an event basically to celebrate, like, women who identify, like, as queer or trans or both, or basically celebrating women, WLWs. And it's in
Las
Vegas.
What is WLW for the people who don't know?
Women who love women, basically. Women loving women.
Yes, I'm into it. If y'all are gonna go, hit up Maitha, like, let her know so y'all can, like, you know, kick it and get some drinks, you know.
For sure. I'm like 90% sure I'm going at this point. And oh. Yeah. So, like, let me know. I want to know if you guys will be there. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The first year, which was last year, I went, and, I mean, there wasn't that many POCs there. And I think it was, I don't know what the reason for that was, but I'm trying to get us out there, because there's definitely a lot for us to enjoy at that convention. There's stuff for us. There's panels for us.
Yes, we need more POC out there, por favor, more POC anywhere.
Right on. So, cabronas y chingonas, at least one half of us will be out there, so yeah. Hit us up,
hit Maitha up, but yeah, so we love you guys, thanks for listening, we appreciate it, and...
So go on iTunes if you haven't already, rate us, review us, we appreciate it so much, it's like what's gonna help us get more exposure. And we really would appreciate that. Stitcher has that option too. So if you listen on Stitcher, you can rate and review there.
Look for us. We'll look for you. And thanks so much, you guys. Later.
Bye, guys.